$2 the price of personality on this podcast. I don't know.
Yeah,
we're now $2. Starting a Patreon. $2 and Dan takes Fallout Boy off.
Yeah.
Mute 616 year old for all Vince Marvel main continuity. God, this is a bad start.
Bad or excellent?
Show me the money. It's gonna happen.
Wait, I'm going around our marketing all wrong. $2 and Dan keeps Fallout Boy on.
Start the steps now.
Ching, ching, ching.
So all three of us are here, so this is a good week.
Somebody just called me an ass.
They know you.
That's not the point. Yeah, okay. Yeah, you want me to keep my clothes on? Let's see the money. Come on. There's no money coming in, is there? No, you know what that means.
Please tell me you have the ability to take it off from this call.
It means people want me to take it off.
I think yeah. I do, but
you better find out real quick. He's getting ideas, and it's all my fault.
Getting ideas. Oh my god. Yeah. So before we even hit record, we started talking about football again, right? And so really, this is the weekend where we'll know how the league's going to end. Right, this year, Premier League. So, our resident Man U fan is hiding his head in the sand for most of the season.
Well, I've known how the season was going to end since like the second week. Poorly.
You might make the Europa League if you know all the cards fall into place. And
it's possible.
The angels sing.
I'd consider it good from where we are right now if we can make the Europa Conference League.
You might, if you can get into fifth, but...
No, that's the one that you have to be in seventh for.
Oh, that one. Oh, God, I forgot that even existed.
That's realistically, because we're not making fifth unless something wild happens above us on the table.
It's kind of like
think
the
it would take Boat City getting sanctioned this year and probably relegated, and one of the other teams doing well to have a massive collapse.
Yeah, and Klopp having a heart attack and Guardiola being mugged. You know, your Europa Conference League, Ryan, is kind of like when you're at the arcade and you given the, you know, the 200 tickets for the really cool pen where the girl's bikini comes off, and you got two tickets left. And for that two tickets, you can get that one piece of, you know, 3-year-old bubble gum. It's been sitting there that nobody else wants. And it's just in there in a little wrapper.
Now, what's that like compared? What's that compared to the 30-year-old bubble gum?
It's about the same. It's like a boiled sweet. It's so nasty.
Are you telling me bubble gum doesn't take long to go bad?
Longer depends than we thought. Is the flavor sealed in or not?
Yeah, if it's in that foil wrapper, avoid it. Oh my god. Wow, was that a mistake? But if it's the really nasty, hard, crackly piece that's just covered in powder, like flour or something, yeah, go for it. What's the worst that can happen?
Break it too, if it's okay.
No, it'll explode in your mouth.
Oh, no, it'll turn to dust.
It just turns to dust and disappears.
It just turns to dust.
Yeah, it's really, really terrifying. Right, because when I broke it in half and handed it, like, short version, we all worked in a comic shop. This comic shop has, like, the owner would pick up boxes of old cards, unopened packs of cards every once in a while. And there was it Mutant Ninja Turtles?
1989 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
The movie. They had packs of those gum cards. And they had a strip of bubble gum in them. And so we opened a pack. And I pulled out the bubble gum and went...
Over 30 years old.
Yeah, over 30 years old. But I pulled a strip of bubble gum out and I looked at it and I went, And then I looked over at Bill, who was sitting there happily pricing magic cards. And I went, hey, Bill. And he went, yeah, okay. And so we tried the gum.
And that's the story of the powdery gum.
And we're allowed to talk about this.
The flavor sealed gum was a different pack that I found lying on the floor in the corner.
Yeah.
And it had one of those foil gums in it. I think this one was 1987.
Yeah.
And I hold it up and I go, I'll do it if you will. And Dan tells me to fuck off and then takes his half of the gum. So we had to do it.
Yeah. the flavor was kind of akin to a cross between a piece of rotting tuna and ass sweat. It was just, it was so nasty.
I'm worried that you know what ass sweat tastes like, but having tried that gum, now I know what it tastes like too.
I'm guessing it was fucking vile. It was, my mother told me, be careful what I put in my mouth. I should have listened.
You know?
But no, I figured Bill was willing to do it. I'd try it.
To quote Deadpool, don't swallow. Because yeah, did, and my stomach immediately lurched sideways.
He did. He didn't spit it out. He actually swallowed the gum.
That's how crazy Bill is.
And I mean, we're talking, this was a 30-plus-year-old friggin' gum out of a pack of cards. And it was so gross. Oh my god, it was nasty. Right? I had that taste in my mouth all friggin' day that day, too. It was just
we both did.
I forget which one we tried to get rid of.
We were there for the 30-year-old sealed gum, the really bad one.
Yeah. But you didn't.
Because we did the powdery one before we knew you.
Yeah. Yeah, and you didn't do the 30-year-old seal gum, did you? No.
No.
Not Ryan. He's a good boy.
Someone's a coward and or has common sense. I will leave it up to you, gentle viewer.
And
to
then
decide
there's
which.
Ryan. Oh, God, never again. Until next time.
Yeah. So on only slightly less painful circumstances.
Yes.
I watched Madam Web.
And
it is worse than they make it out to be.
Oh, really? Oh, no.
I sat through the whole thing and I'm not sure what was supposed to be going on in it.
Kind of like when I was watching Werewolf by Night.
Really?
I haven't seen the movie, but I've read enough of the comics to not expect good things from a Werewolf by Night.
People actually like Werewolf by Night.
I thought it was okay. I just didn't understand what the hell was going on 90% of the time.
The story for Werewolf by Night is very convoluted. If they stayed remotely true to the comic with the movie, it would be very confusing.
Supposedly they did, so maybe that's why.
It got really confusing when Man-Thing showed up.
Wait, Man-Thing's in that? Yeah, I actually might have to watch that, even if it's confusing.
People love him in it.
Yeah, oh, Man-Thing's great.
People marked out for
Man-Thing. Man-Thing is one of the biggest surprises I've had from reading the order, because it always seemed like a character I wouldn't like. And then I've loved pretty much every appearance he's had up to like late 70s.
Yeah, no, he wasn't bad. I mean, it was kind of like that episode of She-Hulk where all the old school villains showed up in a support group. Right?
It's just,
and you just feel like you need to be there with them.
Yeah, a character that doesn't really have agency or intelligence seems like a bad driver to a story, but it actually works.
Not in Ryan's case.
Oh, that reminds me.
Wham!
That reminds me. Bam. I've got good news for you, Ryan.
I saw
rumors that Rob Zombie might be directing a Freddy Krueger movie. I don't know how true they are. I haven't been able to confirm it, but I've seen rumors.
Oh,
well, it has been a long time since 2010, so.
He might be doing a Nightmare movie.
Yeah, well, they said specifically Freddy Krueger, which makes me wonder if it's not going to be part of the Nightmare at Elm Street franchise, and they just call it, like, Freddy Krueger or something.
Well, I think.
But it's only been true rumors, so who knows how true it is.
There's been rights issues with both the Friday movies and the Nightmare movies, I think. So that might be why there's confusion over that.
They tried to reboot both of them already once and failed. So
That's because one company owned the rights to the Friday name and stuff, but one owned. That's why when they transferred over after like seven of them, it became Jason movies and not Friday movies. That's why it's Jason Goes to Hell, Jason Takes Manhattan, Jason blah blah blah.
Yeah, and it might be the same sort of thing with Freddy Krueger.
It could be.
I don't want to make any guesses at the continuity of the movie, given how vague the information I've found is. But I saw something about that this morning, and it cracked me up, and I'm like, I have to call Ryan out on this.
But, I mean, there's only been two good Nightmare films, you know, to begin with. The rest were all absolute garbage. You know, you'd have to be a hardcore fan to enjoy most of them.
I've never watched them, so.
I mean, that doesn't necessarily prove anything, because there's only ever been one good Hellraiser.
Yeah, and probably only ever will be one good Hellraiser.
Probably.
Although I did hear the latest one isn't terrible. Yeah, just so you know. But, I mean, Hellraisers should have never had a sequel. Right.
I didn't expect any of us to see Madam Web so soon, so that that was exciting. Well,
oh, now I got to see it. I do. Now I have to watch it.
It's not fun bad. It's just boring bad.
So it's like Zombies Halloween.
Kind of, yeah. It's just, like, stupid. You can't laugh at it, really. It's just there, and you watch it for a while, and then it's over, and you leave and never think about it again, unless you mention it on a podcast because you want to get street cred for watching bad movies.
Ow.
Man, it would suck to be that person.
Yeah.
I know, next thing you know, they're going to have to depend on a Toronto sports franchise to bring them some joy in their life.
Oh, you are in trouble. we got in Toronto, the Leafs, the Jays, and the Raptors.
Toronto, yeah. FC.
And FC. FC.
That's the one I actually follow.
Oh, that's right. That's why you're always so depressed.
So far, we haven't conceded a goal this season.
Really? I did not know that.
Of course, we've only scored one goal this season.
Yeah, when does the season start?
3 weeks ago. Ooh. We're on our third game.
Oh, my. Does anybody know how Halifax is doing? Has anybody caught up on it at all?
I'm not sure, but I have.
The sports.
It's legit. All the other crap that goes on in this podcast, I think it's fair to ask.
Current how season? Is doing.
I'll do the legwork.
Yeah, go.
I'm only the main host.
Well, we kick off on the 13th of April.
Okay, well, we're good with that. We can handle that. I did see a trailer for Nick Cage's latest movie. Looks really bad.
Is that one of the ones that was on the horror list?
Yeah,
that we covered?
I don't know if we've covered it yet, but it's kind of a sci-fi invasion movie. It looks like it'd be similar to some of the more recent sci-fi invasion films. The one Chris Pratt did, whose name title totally eludes me, and A Quiet Place and stuff like that. Big, nasty, ugly aliens, people in hiding trying to survive. So it looks like it's just kind of a B version of that.
Was this Arcadian? Sort
of Arcadian. Yeah, that's the one. It looks
those,
like
those sort of movies are getting overdone now.
Yeah, well, this one certainly is.
It's an idea that can only work a couple of times, and then you have to let it rest for a while. And because A Quiet Place did so well, now everyone's trying to do their own version.
Yeah, well, between, you know, what was it, Battle, L.A., Skyline, on and on and on and on and on and on, right? That idea has gotten really, really old, so. We'll see.
Battle of L.A. was actually a decent movie.
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad.
Yeah. Oh, and what I was actually Googling before we got distracted by Halifax Wanderers, I was trying to see if I could find the thing I had seen on the Rob Zombie thing
to
the group chat. Yes. I didn't find that, but I did find a debunk of it. It's a hoax.
Oh.
Apparently.
Too bad.
More information came out. It was supposed to be a Freddy Krueger television series called Fred. And okay. I was tempted to try to lead Ryan on for a while, but I don't want anyone who actually sees this to think it's a real thing. So no, it's,
yeah, no, that's fair.
It is, in fact, a hoax.
Well, thank God.
But that's all right. I still got the joy of the mockery out of it.
That's
and it's
true.
Not like I was going to watch it if it was real.
Yeah, that's right. I'm trying to visualize a Freddy Krueger TV show.
It could be works. Be good. The Chucky TV show turned out to actually be good.
Scream
Scream TV show was excellent.
Being done by Rob Zombie. Let's be clear. That would make it terrible.
They weren't done by Rob Zombie. That's definitely.
That would make them terrible.
I think in their favor. But
taking a horror movie icon like that and making a TV show out of it can work.
The
Bruce Campbell show was good too.
That's a little different.
Yeah, that's
in my opinion. And you've also got Bruce Campbell sort of as a driving force behind the character, right? It doesn't matter what Bruce Campbell does, it's going to do well. Right? Just simply by the force of the characters he plays. And if you turn around and say, oh, look, we've got Ash, and he's going to,
fact that they let Bruce Campbell at 50-something play Ash and the Living Dead instead of recasting the character was probably the best decision they made.
Oh, without a doubt. But I mean, for those of you who have seen Bubba Ho-Tep,
I love that movie.
Trust me. Bruce Campbell is
Bruce Campbell is the reason that movie's good.
Yeah, but I mean, he's the unsung leading man of our generation. He just is. It's a miracle that
Dan's
man
generation
hasn't won an Oscar. No, actually Bill's. But it's a miracle that man hasn't won an Oscar just for his body of work. Take a film that's absolute crap and make it good.
It's the type of stuff he does. He'll never get recognized.
I know. It's a sin. It is. It's an absolute sin. Just anyway. Having said all that, how are the donations going? Are we getting money? Or do my clothes come off?
Don't worry, I donated $100 to the Keep Dan's Clothes On Fund.
Damn it. You ruined everything, Bill. God damn it.
Is one of the hosts of this podcast that then claimed it for myself.
Ah. Back pay, was it?
This is episode 77.
Ryan's trying to salvage something serious out of this.
Yeah, and just so you know, Bill, that Man U jersey I found that was just way too small, you still use it as a mask to hide your face. Yeah.
I'm trying to make myself look better. I murder Ritman you before you get a chance.
Ow. That was physically painful. Yeah, okay. Let's go on to the comics.
So first up, Spider-Man. Let's continue Dan's suffering.
Pull the rope. Bail.
Actually, it's not Spider-Man. I just wanted to fuck with Dan a bit more.
We'll just make Dan read first.
Any ripcord will do. Tales of Suspense.
Yes, number 78, Ace Away, Crescendo. This was written by Stan Lee, art by Gene Colan.
You said that wasn't the one. You said it was 77.
That's said
the
77B.
Second one, 77B.
Oh. 78A.
You get an Iron Man and a Captain America for variety's sake.
I said it was the wrong one because you were at the wrong Captain America when we were doing the second one.
Okay, so which one are we doing?
78A story, and then it goes 77B story. It makes you backtrack.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes.
Oh, this is going to suck. If it wasn't bad enough having to do these freaking things last week, now we're going to do the rest of them?
Yeah, we do have to finish them.
All right, and now we're going to go out and try the Kool-Aid from the Kool-Aid ad in the back.
I hope it's grape flavored.
You guys can try the Kool-Aid. I'm buying myself a fucking monkey.
Really?
This was the era they sold monkeys out of comic books.
That's true, the sea monkeys.
No, real monkeys.
Ooh, Davy Jones?
They mailed them to you.
Cool.
And yes, I'm aware of the issues with sending a live animal through the U.S. Postal Service. Assuming it was still alive when it arrived at your house, it was now cranky, filthy, and hungry, and would probably leap out and scratch your face up as soon as you opened the box.
That's fair. Yeah. It's kind of like going into, Rainbow's End. Daniel be in there, and you kind of just had to be really careful. And cranky, filthy, hungry.
Fuck, this is going off the rail.
I'm just visualizing it. I can see it. Right?
To be fair, the monkey is less likely to be masturbating.
Oh, yeah, probably not. Yeah. Yeah, it's busy throwing its own filth at people. I'm sorry. I'm still visualizing walking in one day and he's asleep in the aisle. On a cot. And I just stood there staring at him going,
I threw the plush Pokeballs at him. That didn't wake him up. So I threw one of the hard Pokeballs that comes with like the pack of cards inside it at his head.
Yeah.
At least the place isn't easy to find because they don't have a website.
Cause you quit.
Yeah.
And it took the website with you.
Anyway, well,
they still do the Facebook thing, don't they?
Oh, shit.
I don't know. I blocked them so they couldn't find me.
Let's not put them over.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I gotta share a story before we go any further.
Oh, no.
Oh,
is this really an on-air story?
This is... Or
have we just given up on Karen?
We've given up on Karen. I got a message.
Dan's already doxed us, so fuck it.
Yeah. I got a message via Facebook earlier this week from Susan. And she wanted to know if there was any chance I could burn a CD, a song onto a CD for her. I swear to God.
Don't do it. It's a trap. It's the song. Can you please install our security system for us, Dan?
Oh boy. I'm surprised he hasn't followed through on that one.
But he probably figured out he had to pay for the security system, and the government wanted the COVID money back.
Yeah, well, I as tactfully as I could explain to her that I'd thrown my CD burner in the garbage about a decade ago. And it was like, oh, they said, just download it onto a flash drive, which apparently was, I need it on CD. So I told her, just order it. just order the bloody thing.
It was probably so they could listen to it in a van on the way to trade shows.
I suppose, yeah. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy.
It had to be some of the whale song or something.
I was just visualizing.
For people listening, that's not a joke. Into like 40 CD rotation that was played in the store. One of the CDs was like whale songs, and the owner would get really, really mad if we skipped it.
Well, Daniel needed something to sleep to.
Or even worse, when he wasn't looking, because when he wasn't in the store, took it out and replaced it with Rotting Christ and waited to see how long it would be until he noticed. I think Nuge got blamed for that one.
Yeah, Nuge got blamed for that one.
It was not Nuge.
No, it wasn't. I know it wasn't Nuge. You know that. He got blamed.
Yeah.
He totally got blamed for it. I think that he got fired for that.
No, he got fired for stealing stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but because I know Nuge wasn't the one who did it, so.
Yeah. No, the one who did it was me.
Oh, there you go.
Twist.
I thought that was obvious when I was telling the story that it was actually something I did, because I'd take Jim's Whale Song CD out and hide it and then put in the like heaviest metal I could find in its place.
Uh-huh.
And then I wouldn't use the CD player all weekend so that he'd be surprised sometime during the week when I wasn't around when this came on.
Well, he used to crap on me because I would deliberately burn CDs with like Doobie Brothers, Fleetwood Mac, all this, you know, fun 70s, 80s stuff, and play it all weekend while they were away. And then I'd just leave it in there. And of course, Jim would yank it out and throw it in the garbage. And so I'd just burn another one the next week. And, you know, same CD, just burn another copy, put it back in the CD player. God, he used to get angry at me. My God, he'd get angry at me.
Oh,
what am I listening to? Pink Floyd, dumbass.
And the kicker is he had like three Pink Floyd CDs of his own in there, but yours wasn't the right one.
Yeah, I know. I know. I was listening to slightly more classic Pink Floyd, so.
At first, I was just taking random CDs out and replacing them with stuff. But once I found the Whale Song CD, I always took it out and I'd throw it in behind stuff in like the kids' book section. I'd shove it. I'd put it in the case so I didn't ruin it. But I'd shove it down in the back behind all the kids' books and leave it there.
Oh, God. He got so mad when I hit a bunch of them. Where are my fucking CDs? Gee, I don't know, Jim. You're the only one who was back there. You're the one who cleaned it. Did I? I have no memory of CDs, Jim. Oopsie.
I mean,
I was back there cleaning. I can't tell. It's already back to the same state.
To drive things home for any potential... when potentially listening to this, we're forbidden from playing commercial radio in there because people might hear an advertisement for a completely different genre of store and leave and go shopping there because advertising is so powerful.
Yeah, we
like God forbid they hear
things.
An ad for Bath Fitter while they're in the store because they're gonna leave and buy a bathtub.
They could. That's a legit concern, Bill. I don't think you should be making small of that. That's you're so cold, so cruel. Yeah.
I think we should move on to the comments for the second time.
We're so going to get this. This is all going to be canceled and shut down.
This is going to be the one that people watch.
Yeah, honest to God.
50 people are like, hey, I know who they're talking about.
Shit. Anyways, Tales of Suspense number 78A story, Crescendo. Stanley writes this, Gene Colan art, one of the saving graces of this whole run. Jack Abel on inks. Jack Kirby does the cover because it's the Captain America cover. Artie Simic's on letters. April 1966 release date, 12-page story, and Dan will finally take this one away.
Oh God, the cover's crap, by the way. It's horrible.
Ugh. It needs to fall down a flight of stairs and not be rescued.
That's right. You're never going to forgive me for that, are you?
No, I'm not. You had a perfect opportunity to solve so many problems, and it wouldn't have even been your fault. You're old. You're not supposed to have good hearing, and his father was right there and didn't hear it. Apply air quotes as necessary.
I'm 99% sure he did hear it.
So am I. That's why I said to apply air quotes if necessary. He's sitting there like, if I can just ignore this for 4 hours, all my problems are solved.
It'd be such a great drive home. Oh, my God. Yeah. I don't know how he didn't hear it. It was horrible.
No, he totally heard it.
It was just, it was like an Eddie Murphy skit. You know, it like just crash, bang, boom, bam. It's like, what the fuck is going on? And I'm sorry I went and helped, okay? Do you forgive me?
Oh, I'll never forget that day. Holy shit.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you know what? We better go on to Iron Man before we really do get into trouble here. Okay, synopsis for Crescendo. Iron Man was literally in the grip of the Mandarin's giant android, Ultimo, and hurtling toward a rocky wall. He then averts the stunning and perhaps lethal impact by using his jet boots to direct himself away from the rocky outcrop. Iron Man, though free, discovers that he's outmatched physically in every way to his foe. Weapons and strength are useless as the armored hero reels before the onslaught of Ultimo's I-beam attacks. The Mandarin is only viewing and directing the action from afar by TV monitor and concludes that Iron Man is in flight. Rather than just purposeless flight from Ultimo, Iron Man acts on the knowledge he has gained as Tony Stark in the Mandarin's castle and lures the giant humanoid back to the volcano in which it was created. Iron Man gets Ultimo to unleash the power of the volcano itself in a dodge of the I-beams that had been assaulting him through the Chinese countryside. Wow, this is just ridiculously tedious. Ultimo is ultimately undone. Nice alliteration. Nice alliteration.
Stan Lee would be proud.
He would. Ultimo is ultimately undone by the lava flow loosened by his own blasts, and the Mandarin takes solace in his inevitable conquest of the world and believing to have killed Iron Man's employer, Tony Stark. Iron Man, however, is still stranded in Red China, though the Mandarin has abandoned any further interest in the adventure. Iron Man crosses a landscape on foot to reach an airbase of the Red Army that had been threatening the Mandarin before Ultimo attacked. Underpowered, Iron Man fights the remaining troops to get at the remaining MiG fighter that he hopes will fly him back to Western-controlled airspace. Airborne in the stolen aircraft, the Avenger is intercepted by U.S. fighters, but manages to avoid being shot down thanks to his Avenger security clearance. Back in the States and resuming his civilian self, finds Tony Stark a day later at the gates of his now-closed Flushing factory. And offices with scattered discarded newspapers sporting
headlines.
That's
in Flushing, New York.
Okay. That the government has ordered the place shut down. Tony reads from one of the papers the details that his money has been frozen and a warrant is standing for his arrest on top of the closure of all the Stark Industries.
I didn't think we were fighting Jack Frost this early.
That's a comic that's better than it sounds.
It really is.
I gave this a three.
Flushing factories down the drain.
Problem with that synopsis was a lot of the stuff that flows really well in the comic.
With a plunger.
They went into way too much detail. Like, they made it sound like it was a huge ordeal for him to go to the airbase and fight all the Chinese and steal the MiG. It was like three panels total.
I see.
Now, we talked about Ultimo last week and how he surprisingly works, and he's still good here. I kind of wish he got more time to rain havoc, but at least the conclusion was done decently.
I like how they disabled Ultimo, because, spoiler, he's not destroyed.
I think we could probably shoehorn in a lot more toilet jokes, you know, about Flushing, New York.
Not necessarily a bad idea.
I know, right?
Particularly the upstate part. I mean, that's beautiful, but it's like Georgia transported to the Northern Adirondacks.
Wow. Just where we want to be. Is that a banjo I hear? Anyway.
Bam, 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 bam.
Ryan wouldn't get that one, but trust me. Oh, there's a movie Ryan needs to see. Deliverance.
They're already not going camping, so it doesn't really change anything.
That's true.
That's true. I hate camping.
Well, how about canoe trips? What do you think? You think
I hate
enjoy
boats
a canoe
of
trip?
Any kind.
I don't know, Bill. I don't think we were going to pull it off. I just think, you know, a Route 616 retreat might be good for us. You know, just a little team building exercise.
Take a little. We can't even do one of these episodes live in person. How do you expect that to go off?
We get a canoe, we get Ryan into biker shorts, and we go through the Adirondacks. See how it works out.
I'm going to try to take my podcast back and move on to Tales of Suspense number 77 B story. This one is titled If a Hostage Should Die. Stanley writes this, of course. John Romita Sr. is on art. Frank Giacola is on the inks here. Gene Colan and Jack Abel did the cover. Oh, yeah, that is an Iron Man cover, so yeah. Sam Barrison on letters. February 1966 release date, 10 page story. And Dan will also take this one. Don't send me the Deliverance clip. Oh.
I didn't. I sent a team building retreat full of nerds clip.
While watching a documentary of his aid in liberating Nazi occupied France in World War II, some of the footage causes Cap to squeal like a pig. I mean, to think about the mysterious war.
Squeal like a pig, boy.
You knew that was coming, Bill. Come on. You got to admit, you knew that was coming.
No, I didn't. That's why it got me so good.
It was going to happen. Causes Captain to think about the mysterious woman whom he had loved back then. Recalling back to his time in Nazi-occupied France, Captain America was battling Nazis when he met the girl as she was leading a band of French resistance fighters. Having to part on their separate missions, the girl and her resistance fighters get captured by the Nazis, something that Cap finds out while fighting a different battle and rushes to her aid. There he is told he was too late to save her and single-handedly defeats the Nazis in the camp. When victorious, it becomes apparent that Captain America helped free France from Nazi control and is carried off by the victors as a hero, even though he is trying to break away to search for the girl, little knowing that she is watching the whole spectacle. Unfortunately, the shell blast made her lose her memory, so she walks off into the shadows. Finishing his recollection, Cap laments over the fact that he never learned the true fate of his mysterious blonde romance. It's not written as blonde, it's blonde romance.
Yeah, because of the shell going off and making her lose her memory.
Yeah, that romance got blown off.
You got a real pretty mouth, Ryan.
So if Deliverance here is finished, I'm going to talk about the actual significance of this comic. This is Sharon Carter.
Oh, Agent.
No, that, seven. Or sorry, Peggy Carter. Oh, wrong okay. One. This is the World War II one that Sharon's her niece.
Okay. Agent Carter.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought she was British.
That is a development of the MCU to account for Hayley Atwell.
Okay.
She's actually American, although I don't think they had decided on that at this point, because she's presented as just a member of the French Resistance here, but she's later retconned to be Sharon Carter.
Ah, yes, because there's...
Or Peggy Carter. Keep using the wrong name.
Peggy, yeah, because the Carters are a very well-known French family.
Yeah. Well, you'll note she didn't get a name and was left with amnesia here because they clearly intended to pick this story back up. I think it's most likely what actually happened is when they realized the World War II stories weren't working and switched back to the modern framing for
Captain America.
Jack had already drawn this. So they saved it for a while and then wrote a story and released it as a flashback, but there was probably supposed to be a payoff to the memory loss in the next issue originally. Because it's been years since I've read the follow-ups to this.
Sure.
So I don't remember exactly how it is when Sharon or when Peggy's first introduced, but I believe she had regained her memory years ago and like knew who Cap was. So this is just kind of a dangling thread.
Well, this story came with the flashback and stuff after the previous two issues. The girl was introduced in the present, who looked like the one the Cap's reflecting on now.
Yes, that would be Sharon, where I keep getting the name wrong from.
Because we met Sharon last time, and now this is Peggy.
Yeah, although at this point, they haven't yet been given an official connection beyond just looking similar.
It's beyond, oh my god, this girl looks like the girl I used to love.
And this was also released in a Captain America annual about 10 years ago now.
Again. Hey, I've got an idea. Rate the damn thing.
I gave it a 3.
3?
Yeah, 3.
I like this one. The story framing of this one's pretty cool because it's an early take of part of it's in the present and they're reflecting on their history and it worked for me.
Yeah. This one's gotten a lot better every time I read it because of the early Captain America, this is probably the story I've read the most. Because, as mentioned, it was released in an annual or something, like 10 years ago when I was buying Captain America comics. Uh-huh. So I actually own a printing of this comic. And so I had read it then, and then twice through for the order. So,
yeah.
And it's gotten better every time. The first time I read it, when it was surrounded by actual modern comics, it was a tough read because it has all the bad elements of early comic storytelling that we're not used to anymore. But reading it in amongst comics of its time is very good.
Anyways, we'll go from one of Dan's favorites to another of Dan's favorites, as we'll move on to Amazing Spider-Man now with issue number 34. This one is titled The Thrill of the Hunt. Guess who the villain is in this comic? Oh, wait, it's on the cover. Stanley and Steve Ditko still together here. Sam Rosen's on letters. December 1965 release date, 20-page story. And Bill will take this one.
All right.
Get away, George.
Kraven the Hunter walks around his trophy room, plotting his revenge against Spider-Man and his return to America. Meanwhile, Betty Brant confronts Peter to reveal his secret, and Peter finally gives in and reveals himself as Spider-Man. But Betty wakes up to realize it was only a nightmare. Peter goes back to college, relieved now that Aunt May has a clean bill of health. While trying to go about a normal day, he gets snubbed by Gwen Stacy and Harry Osborn for being antisocial. Spider-Man begins stalking J. Jonah Jameson's movements and tries to corner him. Jameson flees, and Spider-Man is seen as attacking him instead and runs away. However, this is not Spider-Man, but his foe Kraven in disguise. Peter hears about the trickster running around and decides to let him do so for the next few days. To save his reputation, he finally tracks down and chases the imposter to figure out who he is. When he follows him to an abandoned building, he runs into Kraven, who sprays a mist, canceling out his spider sense. Spider-Man goes around the building, loaded with traps, and finally battles Kraven. They trade blows before a gang of crooks makes them relocate their fight. Soon enough, Spider-Man gives a final knockout punch and delivers the gang and Kraven in a neat spider web for the police. Kraven then confesses his impersonation of Spider-Man to the police and clears Spider-Man's name. Jameson learns the news and angrily dismisses a secretary who's replaced Betty as she left without warning. Peter is turning over in his mind thoughts of Betty, not knowing her disappearance. That's an awkward sentence.
Yeah.
Peter realizes he must move on as he's accepted his fate as Spider-Man, but Betty never would. And that's the end of that. We are now firmly in Stan riveting. And Steve are not talking territory.
Riveting.
There's certainly some weak points to this comic, but I actually really enjoyed this one still.
Yeah, I really like this one too, but it's definitely the cracks are starting to show and they'll become real apparent in the next issue.
I was about to say really soon. I actually gave this one a 4. This is actually the highest rated comic of the week, I think. Well, it's tied with number one, I think.
Yeah.
Craven's a little goofy here. I don't like the Craven plan of him dressing up as Spider-Man. It doesn't work for me because a lot of interactions with Spider-Man, more in modern comics, but even upcoming in Daredevil, it's kind of referenced. But people tend to be able to tell that Spider-Man is actually a boy, is actually a young adult.
Yeah.
So it's like this grown-ass burly man is dressed up as Spider-Man and then regular Spider-Man, and people can't tell the difference at all.
I mean, to be fair,
I know it's in the 60s.
Yeah, but the person who's accusing him of being the same person is Jonah, who is deeply incentivized for Spider-Man to get blamed, even if Jonah notices that this guy's built kind of different.
Yeah. That's true, but he is out on the streets doing. Wasn't he out on the streets doing stuff too?
Yeah, but got close to Jonah, but no one else was close to him. They just saw a Spider-Man, like someone in a Spider-Man comic, menacing Jonah, and then Jonah's like, "Yeah, it was Spider-Man who did it. We need to go get him."
Agreed. It was
fair enough then,
and we need to.
Yeah. Gave that one a pass because I wrote it off as wistful thinking on Jonah's part. He's like, great, I'm finally going to get him for something, and he doesn't think any closer.
Fair.
In fact, it kind of comes out at the end when Craven admits that he was faking it, and Jonah's furious because now he's going to have to take back all the stuff he said about Spider-Man.
I could see people being annoyed with the Betty Dream sequence, too. It's almost too cute.
That didn't bother me because of its positioning. It was over in a page, so
I kind of like the after response to it. It in terms of Betty being like, "Oh, that could never be," because it just varies the perception of Peter Parker further as he couldn't be Spider-Man.
And they did lay the groundwork in the previous issue where she figured out Peter had some sort of an like excitement addiction or so. So it's kind of like her. After what happened with her brother, trying to work through that Peter also likes to live excitingly and just places him as the worst person she could imagine.
Now,
so it actually kind of worked.
Going with parts I did like against what I didn't like. I like seeing Kraven again, even if it's not in wasn't my favorite way of doing it, but I still really enjoyed the issue, and Kraven was a big part of that.
He seems a little Kraven. What a stupid name for a friggin' character.
The other part I like of these comics right now is I'm liking the Peter at college aspects of these a lot.
Yeah, that's really good.
I've been enjoying seeing the early usage of Gwen Stacy and Harry Osborn so far.
Yeah.
Especially Gwen. The Gwen stuff's pretty fun.
Yeah, the Gwen stuff is really good. The fact, because like Steve gets a bad rap from these early comics for being so cynical about human nature and like no one liking Peter. And for the most part, that's true because everyone treats Peter like shit. But except for like Aunt May and so, but of his peers, pretty much everyone treats him like crap. But then he comes along and writes Gwen, who actually likes him. And it's only because Peter's distracted worrying about something else that she starts thinking that maybe he's a dick.
Sorry.
So yeah, that was Amazing Spider-Man issue number 35. Let's move on to issue 34. Let's move on to issue 35. This one is titled The Molten Man Regrets. We're just going to ignore Dan. Okay. So Stan Lee and Steve Ditko still together. Artie Simic's on letters this time. And we got January 1996 release date on this one. 20-page story. And this is a Molten Man comics. This is going to be one of the weaker Spider-Mans. Bill will take it.
Molten Man sees Judge His Honor. Real creative name there, Stan Lee. Molten Man sees Judge His Honor, and the judge takes pity on him and lets him go without any punishment, since he has agreed to pay for the damages he has caused. So we're jumping into the middle. He's locked up, and he's going to his parole hearing.
Okay.
And he gets released because he's a first-time offender, and he says that the formula that turned him gold messed with his head, and he'll pay for the damages.
That's good of him.
Yeah. He's lying, but he says that.
Yeah, it's a nicer plea of insanity.
Yeah. Molten, and it makes sense in the world with supervillains that, you know, these sort of transformations could mess with your head.
It actually is a very logical out here because of, I mean, he had whole these substances thrown onto him to become, it actually does make sense. It's better than a lot of the other, how these characters got out of jail situations they've written so far.
Yeah.
But that's the best part of the book about the Molten Man, though, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Molten Man goes free and shows he has no intention of going straight. Me either. After some planning, he enters into a jewelry store and asks to see the most expensive items for sale. He's in disguise at this point.
That is an important...
No,
that's an important detail. He's not just like a bright gold guy. Like, let me see your jewels. I totally won't steal them. Once they are outside of the safe, the owner tries to stop Molten... I'm going to stop trying to read this fucking summary because it's missing so many key features. The owner takes the jewels out of the safe so they can look at them, and he just grabs them and starts running. So the owner tries to shoot him,
and
the bullets just bounce off. This is when you realize that it's Molten Man, because until this point, it's just some random guy. They don't show you Molten Man getting disguised. Spider-Man swings in and sees the theft in progress, so he starts trying to fight with the thief, who he still thinks is just a normal guy, and gets knocked out by Molten Man. And Spider-Man figures out after Molten Man escaped that the only guy who could hit him that hard is Molten Man, because he's on the cover. And so he goes to his old house and finds him there and puts a spider tracer on him and tracks him to the same jewelry store. And he tries to break in and rob it again. So they fight for a bit until Molten Man can escape. And Molten Man goes back to his house, where Spider-Man finds him, fights him again, and hogties him, delivering him to the police. And then he gets his pictures of himself fighting Molten Man and sells them to Jonah. And when he's selling them to Jonah, he learns that Betty no longer works there. And, he realizes that Betty and Ned have gone to the West Coast and most likely are married.
We later find out that Jonah did not pay for these pictures and Peter was too distracted to make sure he got paid.
Yeah, he's like, send me the check later. I know you're good for it. And that's not wise.
Okay, first of all, can we stop disparaging Jonah? The one... real hero in this story, and you guys have to piss on him.
Sorry, Kevin Kelly, I'll stop with the libel.
Thank you. I will Alina Haba your ass so hard if you keep this up.
So, argue your case so poorly that you get disbarred?
If it works. It's making her famous.
She's going to have a push plum cushion deal on Fox News when this is finished.
She got paid first, so...
Yeah. I mean, that's a given. Just ask Rudy.
No, she was smart enough to get paid first. Yeah. So she's doing good. Just saying.
A step down in terms of quality for this Spider-Man to the last. I didn't like... this one got a pass in 3, but kind of just barely. I was debating between the 2 and 3 on this one for a good chunk of it, but it just got passed.
I was going to until the last scene with Peter finding out what happened to Betty, and that was just enough to pull it over to 3 line for me. Because that... Like, I summarized it quite quickly because the summary was really bad that I was reading, and so I was trying to remember it based on what they had written. But I actually quite liked that moment of realization. That was a good moment, and that was enough to pull it up for me. But yeah, it was sitting at 2 until then.
The emotional beats in Amazing Spider-Man are
bad.
top tier, and Molten Man is just shitty fucking villain. Molten Man sucks. Molten Man is the worst recurring villain in Spider-Man so far.
Yeah.
By really? A long shot.
Wow.
That's why this comic just... almost got a 2. But
yeah, he's just a generic super strong guy.
The other good aspects.
Almost got a 2.
Yeah, but the other stuff saved it that was the sides, the relationship aspects and the other side characters. The side characters in this series are the best thing going.
Yeah.
Side casts help tell stories.
Yeah, Jonah being sneaky as fuck when Peter's like upset and he's like, guess I don't have to pay him was great. Because even though it's not revealed that he actually doesn't send the check, as soon as Peter says, like, mail me the check, Jonah gets kind of this smug look on his face, like, oh yeah, I'm going to take this kid so hard.
It's in the mail.
Jonah should be an independent wrestling promoter. But then...
anyway. Fuck you, you're working twice if you want bologna on that sandwich.
Let's move on to Surgeon Fury and the Silent Commandos, number 28. This one's titled, Not a Man Shall Remain Alive. We've got Stan Lee writing, Dick Giles on art, John Tartaglione on inks. Dick Giles and John Tartaglione did the cover. Sam Rosen on inks. Or letters, I mean. Sam Rosen on letters. January 1966 release date. 20-page story. And I shall take this one. Okay. Dan has disappeared. I thought that was the case, so I checked. Synopsis. Fury and his men are sent to France to assist the Free French Resistance in liberating the town of Cherbourg. Meanwhile, in Berlin, Hitler gives an ultimatum to Baron Strucker, whose defeats against the commandos are a constant disappointment to him. He orders his officer to Cherbourg to make an example of the resistance fighters. Upon their arrival, the Howling Commandos join forces with the resistance and help them on a series of raids that sees prisoners freed and Nazi supplies and weapons destroyed. Fury and his Howlers soon learn that the Nazi commanding officer in Cherbourg is none other than their old foe. Strucker is forced to comply with Hitler's orders once Fury and his raids begin affecting Nazi rule over the region. As a means of coercion, he decides to send all his hostages to a concentration camp. Then he threatens to send a dozen more each day until they turn over the saboteurs to him. Some time later, Fury and his men use explosives to stop the train and free the hostages. News of this reaches the ears of Hitler in Berlin. Furious, he summons Baron Strucker and orders him to level the entire town, but the officer is reluctant to slaughter an entire city of civilians. Nevertheless, he is forced to comply when when Hitler threatens to... I can't say that word.
Fuhrer. The word is Fuhrer.
I know what it is, I just can't say it. I'm bad with H's and stuff. And threatens to do even worse if the Baron refuses to obey. Still disgusted at Hitler's orders, Strucker decides to show some mercy and at least post notices on the streets to warn the innocent civilians. Then, Strucker rigs the entire town with explosives. His hesitation to flip the switch when the time comes completely vanishes when a French turncoat reports to him that Fury and his commandos are behind all the sabotages. Which, by the way, the guy who reports back gets freaking struck down. During a direct assault on the government building where Strucker is stationed, the Baron comes face to face with... Fury and threatens to blow it up. They had the sentence structure messed up.
He came face to face with the Fury in the writing.
Yeah.
Many syllables?
They came face to face with Fury and threatens to blow it up if his men do not surrender. Fury tries to bluff his foe with a remote detonator, claiming that the building itself is rigged with nitro. And that's where this one leaves off.
I'm disappointed they gave away it was a bluff in this one. Because it's left as a cliffhanger because Fury can blow up the building and Strucker can blow up the town, so neither one of them wants to push the button.
Yeah, and This is the first of a two-parter that has become obvious now. And the funny part about this is Stan Lee's last issue writing, and he passes off to finish his story. He passes the writing duties off for this next part.
To Larry Lieber. And somehow it is Larry, right?
No, it's not Larry, Roy Thomas.
Roy Thomas, yeah. And somehow this half is the more wordy half. I want to mention something I took real issue with in reading this comic.
Sure.
In fact, that's stupid.
That it sets up Nazi, like, starts off with, do Nazis have any, I forgot the word.
You come guns? Up with it when I complain, because it is about how they portrayed the Nazis here, in that, Hitler is presented as completely batshit, irrationally insane, to the point that he would have no moral culpability in any sort of a court or so nowadays.
Hmm.
And all of his underlings are terrified of him because he's going to murder them if they don't do exactly what he says when he's in his insane raving lunacy. And so in their effort to make the Nazis look more evil, they've actually managed to remove basically all moral culpability from them for what they do. Because they're all terrified of this one insane guy. And so everyone goes along with it. And it moves them into the realm of cartoon evil from real evil.
Yeah, it's pretty much of... On the first page, it starts with... literally starts with the question of, like, can Nazis have any that's not the word I'm looking for.
Integrity? Principles? Because, I mean, that's an interesting topic.
It is, and then they kind of mess it up.
Yeah, because they go over the top in presenting them as evil. And they it takes it to a point that they don't seem evil anymore. It's just like kind of comically exaggerated instead of
they really were. They almost turned Strucker into a tweener.
Oh, don't worry. They ruined that next issue with his complete inconsistent characterization.
Oh, yeah. Roy Thomas, like, pulls it back, is what it seems like.
Yeah, because... Strucker having doubts about the orders he's given and, like, trying to half comply with them so that he can salvage his own sense of honor while still massacring tons of civilians is actually a really interesting topic about how we lie to ourselves and do bad things. To allow ourselves to do bad things. Like, they could do something interesting, but unfortunately 60s comics is not the place to do that. They don't deal with nuance well there.
The opening scroll is a pulse-pounding indictment of man's inhumanity to man and the eternal hope for redemption that lies deep within us all.
A nuance in a Marvel comic. Yeah, that could happen.
Well, they tried it, but they didn't succeed.
Yeah, that's what makes... the Nazis so bad is they're trying to do nuance poorly, and they end up making them just like cartoonishly evil and over the top, so it feels like they're like the villains in a Mel Brooks movie rather than a real like they remind me of the comedic racists from Blazing Saddles more than like actual Nazis because they're so over the top.
They want Christian Cage instead of Adam Page.
Exactly.
That's for the wrestling fans out there.
I say we just put up a toll booth that should slow them down.
Anyways, I gave this one a 4. I actually really liked it, even though there was failure in the nuance of the storytelling.
I gave it a 3, not below you because of the failure in nuance. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a propaganda war comic. I'm not expecting a deep examination of man's capacity for inhumane actions in it.
No.
But just because it was all set up and Stan Lee seemed to want to get in his next three comics worth of words before he left the title, so it took forever to read, and not much interesting actually happened in it.
Here, Roy Thomas, finished my story. On that note, we'll move on to the next one. Sergeant Fury and the Silent Commandos, number 29. This one's titled Armageddon. Roy Thomas is taking over writing duties. Dick Guy's on art still. John Tiglione's on ink still. They do the cover together. Sam Rosen on letters. February 1966 release date. 20-page story. I actually really like this cover. And
this is a very modern-seeming cover.
Yes. I shall jump to this synopsis. I think this is probably the better of the two.
Easily.
Though my grades are the same, spoiler alert, so it doesn't really matter.
Baron my grades Stark are the same too, but I like this one much more.
Yeah, this one's better. Roy Thomas actually does a decent job taking this over.
Roy Thomas isn't a bad writer. He's just very wordy.
Yeah. Baron Strucker has been tasked by Hitler with the destruction of the town of Cherbourg and all its occupants. Hitler hopes to stamp out the French resistance ensconced there. When they come to a stalemate, Fury proposes his opponent to allow 1 hour for the civilians to leave town. Then they can both settle the matter, fighting like men. The solution is welcomed by Strucker, who still has no wish to kill innocent civilians. Innocent citizens, but still gets to defeat his arch nemesis. Unaware that Fury is really stalling for time while resistance fighters are infiltrating Nazi ranks. Because Strucker turns out is a player hater of the year in whatever year this took place in the story. he just wants to kill Fury is what this has turned into. After the Howlers have evacuated the town, they join the resistance fighters against Strucker's Panzer Division. During the course of the battle, one of the Nazis manages to set off the explosives decimating the town. However, the same officer turns against the Baron when he realizes he sacrificed all those Nazi soldiers for his personal vendetta. After Strucker shoots the officer, he and Fury continue the fight on, even though the ferry building they are in is at risk of total collapse. When Strucker almost falls to his death, Fury saves his life, but the building eventually crumbles before they can escape. And Fury saves his life not really just to save his life, but he had other reason, and it was something like he wanted to make sure he paid for his crimes. And,
yeah, his plan was to drag him back to the Allies and have them question him.
Yeah, because they wanted him for all the information to get out of him. So, it wasn't just him being noble, it was him being strategic.
Yeah, because Fury's not terribly noble in these comics. He's much more willing to just shoot the guy if he hasn't overtly surrendered.
Yeah. Freeing himself from the rubble, Fury presumes that Strucker has died in the collapse and reunites with his fellow Howlers. We see later in a tease at the end that he hasn't died, but yeah. However, Strucker has survived and goes into hiding as Hitler orders his death for failing to carry out his mission to destroy the underground and for disobeying a direct order. Ta-da.
Ta-da. So this summary misses an important bit of Roy Thomas rolling back the Strucker character. Because he starts in the same position as the last comic with not wanting to blow up the entire town and kill all the civilians in it. But then, as soon as he realizes he has a chance of getting Fury, he's just like, fuck it, blow up the town.
Like a true hater.
Yeah.
What are you saying that's bad? Oh, okay.
So they don't really manage to sell you on Strucker having higher ideals, because he's willing to reverse them as soon as he gets a chance to get Fury. Although I am really interested on future stories with Strucker, given that now the Nazis hate him too, so he's almost going to be like Red
he's
Skull.
He's still kind of positioned as a tweener a little bit.
Yeah, he's going to be almost like Red Skull in the first Captain America movie with Hydra, where he's willing to wipe out both sides to achieve his own end. That's a good way to shake up the formula of war comics, because you can only do so many war comics where they go and fight Nazis and then they blow something up and they leave. Like that starts getting old. That's why I struggled to give Sergeant Fury above 3 most of the time, because most of the stories just read the same.
I don't,
they go
as
to
I gave
some
this a 4
level,
again.
They start punching people, blow something up and leave.
Yeah,
and spoiler, I also gave this one a 3.
Yeah, we stuck to our ratings for both of these.
Although I have to say, the fight in the crumbling building was one of the coolest fights they've done in any comic so far.
It's a good set piece. I thought these were solidly fun and a pretty good two-parter, even though there was a writing direction change in the middle. It didn't affect too much, though. You felt it a little bit, but
I found it got easier to read was the big thing. Because reading that first part was a major chore, and the second part was a lot more... It flowed better.
It's because Roy Thomas is a better writer.
He is. And the other thing, it wasn't a big gripe, but the Howlers just kind of making their way through this burning town that's exploding. I wish they had gotten the Howlers out of the town before he set off the bombs and just focused on the building crumbling around Nick and Strucker, because it was too easy for the Howlers. Like, they were never in any real danger from all these explosions all around them, and it kind of undersold that they were blowing up an entire town.
Izzy just got bonked once and that was it.
Yeah, he had a building fall on him, but he was fine. And the only reason it happened was so they could set up a joke about Gabe having to drive and Gabe driving like a maniac.
And there's reasons behind that joke.
Yeah, and surprisingly not racist ones. Because they're based on Gabe being from New York, not Gabe being black, which was a nice surprise, because I assumed it was going to be a joke about black people not being able to drive.
That was the biggest shock of this two-parter. When they started the joke, I didn't think it was going to be for New York, I tell you that.
Yeah, no, anytime a pre-Civil Rights Act comic manages to not make the black guy the butt of the joke because he's black, I'm pretty happy.
But yeah, that was... those two Sergeant Furies. With that in mind, that was this week's comics. A pretty solid lineup. Nothing got below 3, so we'll take that. I mean, all of them got below
Spider-Man
3 in Dan's mind, but Spider-Man did try. Tried pretty hard, to be quite honest. But somehow failed. But let's talk about what we're covering next week, which is a very interesting slate of comics.
Oh, fuck off. I saw the first comic.
We're going to start with X-Men number 19. Then we will get an issue of Daredevil, with issue number 15 of Daredevil. We will go after that and get an issue of Spider-Man with Amazing Spider-Man number 36. Then we come back for a two-parter in X-Men with issues 20 and 21. And then we resurface back in the world of Sergeant Fury with Sergeant Fury and Silent Commandos number 30 to end the week off.
Yeah, you've been warned, everybody. You've been warned.
You wonder why people don't come back. My reaction to that first one pretty much holds for this entire week, although the Fury looks interesting.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, yeah, I like the Fury one. It has... it has the moment I had a reaction to in our group chat. It has a very inappropriate plot point, so we'll talk about that next week.
Oh, goody.
Okay.
I hope it's funny and appropriate and not everything that happens in X-Men inappropriate.
We'll
save
that
for
next week.
Don't spoil it. I want my reaction to be pure and untarnished when I read that comic.
Pure.
Unlike I suspect Dum Dum's butthole will be by the end of that issue. Because he's smuggling that vibranium dildo in. That's a callback to last week.
That's a callback.
Right. That's right. I wasn't going to go there. Not once did I mention dildos or anything in this podcast.
Wow. Dan is so well behaved. I can't
it
believe
was
it.
Bill this time. Okay. It was Bill.
Oh, I'm not going to try to deny that.
Think of the marketing opportunities. Yeah.
Take this straight up your route, 616.
You're so naughty.
Anyways, let's get out of here.
We're not going there tonight. We're not going.
Sounds good. Have a good one, everyone.
Well,
see you later.
I haven't even done my plugs, but.
Just bail.
If you're watching this on YouTube, please leave a like, subscribe, comment, whichever you like to. We are also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and of course Spotify. And if you're on Spotify, click that poll. Let us know why you like the Molten Man. And if you do, I'm judging you. Anyways, we will see you all next week. Stay tuned. We're going to release.
It could be worse. You could have gone with the plot of Madam Web.
I'm going to release episode 2 of
the
Pro Wrestling Sim series on our channel. We're going to record that tonight, so stay tuned for that. Go watch the first one if you haven't. And anyway, guys, we'll see y'all later, and peace out.
Have a good one.